Welcome to the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy Dowling, and this week's guest, that's right guys, straight into it, is with Luke Cornish, who is an Australian stencil artist. Now, you might be thinking, stencils, okay, what's the big deal with stencils? And you slap something against a wall, spray over it, and you're done and dusted. Well, that's what I thought until I found out who Luke Cornish was. His work is incredible. It's incredibly complex. It's almost photorealistic. I'm going to put a bunch of examples over at andysocial.net to check out. He's also the first ever stencil artist to become a finalist in the Archibald Prize, which is, for anyone that doesn't know, is like Australia's most prestigious art award or art portrait award that's out there. So he was the first ever, and I don't know if there's anybody that's come after him, but he's the first ever stencil artist to be acknowledged by this prestigious community. He's won a whole heap of other art awards over the years. This guy's legit. He's really, really good. In addition to doing all this amazing work, he's done a lot of international travel where he's done a lot of help with communities in various parts of the world, but most notably in Syria. I'm going to put some links in the show notes over at andysocial.net to check out. But he's got some really cool articles and stuff that goes into depth about his experiences in Syria. But in this episode, Luke runs through some of his experiences, which are really, really crazy. So I'll let him guide us through that. Now, before we kick into it, just one quick disclaimer. This episode was recorded in the inner city suburb of Marrickville in Sydney's inner west. Now, for anybody that knows Marrickville or knows the area, Marrickville is directly under multiple flight paths for Sydney Airport. So both Sydney Domestic and Sydney International Airport. So I didn't think this went ahead, guys. We sat in the back of a cafe, great vibe, great coffee, but these planes kept going over. So there was a few interruptions along the way. So TY has an incredible editing job ahead of him, but from what I've listened to so far, we'll clip out some of them. So you'll notice a couple of jerks along the way, but most of it will be left in there because the mics have picked up most of the conversation anyway. So hopefully it's not too much of a deterrent. It's a great episode and a really good conversation. The quality is still there, but just a couple of interruptions along the way, but we get through it and it's a really, really good chat. So everything will be over at andysocial.net. You can also go to elkstencils.com, which is Luke's website. There's heaps of stuff over there, all of his work, exhibitions, all information over there. Luke mentions a couple of exhibitions that are coming up in 2018, so I'll mention them in the show notes over at andysocial.net. A bunch of other stuff will be over there as well. Okay, guys, enough of me. Please enjoy this episode with Luke Cornish. Well, Luke, thank you very much for battling the chicken pox and coming to have a chat with me.
My pleasure, mate. Thanks for inviting me on.
Yeah, not a problem. And we're just hanging out in Marrickville. We just had a quick look at your studio that you've been in for about 12 months or so. Doing a bit of renos there at the moment.
Yeah, I'm putting a bedroom in my studio, actually. That's my plan. Putting a wall down the middle. Insulating it, soundproofing it. But yeah, that's the plan. Shift back into there because I've got a pretty big space and do maybe 3 months Indonesia, 3 months Sydney. Yep. To chop and change.
Cool.
You know, I've sort of earned all this freedom. I might as well fucking use it. There's no point being in Sydney full time.
And as you mentioned before, you know, the cost of living here in Sydney is just crazy.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
And you mentioned like it'll work out cheaper for you to actually live out of the country for
a few months. Yeah, it's cheaper for me to travel the world and just go and do fucking yoga in Goa for 3 months.
That's mad.
Like 50% of what I'm doing is on a laptop anyway.
Yeah.
So I just go and do it over there, come back, pump out some paintings.
Okay, this is me sort of going down a more business route to begin with, but...
No, don't do it.
No. From a financial point of view, would most of your sort of income come from online stuff, or would you be doing, you know, doing pieces for people and that would be sort of a high revenue stream for you?
No, well, I show with two galleries in Australia, one in Sydney, one in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And majority, 90% of my income comes off exhibiting.
Yeah, cool.
So I have one or two shows a year, and that sort of keeps me going to the next one. And you get some small commissions in the meantime, which is a sort of bonus, but
yeah,
I'm kind of rely on the sales of the shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's all right. I mean, if you're having a couple of a year, then you can definitely sort of, I guess, position them in a way that you can get out of the country for a bit in between. And
without sounding like too much of a dick, the prices are high enough now that I only need to sell 3 or 4 paintings and I'm good for 6 months.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's good. But I mean, obviously, you know, it's that studio hard work and sticking at it for years.
Oh, fuck,
it
didn't fall out of the sky.
Yeah, that's
like,
it.
Yeah.
So I don't think you sound like a dick by saying that. I think it's pretty cool. Yeah, it's obviously, like, I mean, if you started yesterday.
Yeah.
And
just came out commanding high prices.
Yeah, that's right. Well, maybe a different story, but no. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a lot of hard work, a lot of sacrifice. That's what it is.
So I'll do a little bit of, and the listeners of this podcast are getting sick of me saying it, but I'll do a little bit of this is your lifestyle thing.
Really?
You've done some
research.
I've done a little bit, not a great deal. It's not that impressive, but I know that you grew up in Canberra.
Yep.
So were you doing art when you were living in Canberra, or sort of what, I guess before you started this as a full-time gig, what sort of jobs were you doing beforehand? And were you doing art on the side, and how did that work living in Canberra as well?
I'll wait for this plan to go bad. Yeah, so like I always made art as a kid. I was always artistic.
Yeah.
And all throughout school, I was always drawing. But I didn't find art, or stencil art, till my early 20s. I think that was sort of a result of being so fucking bored.
Yeah.
Like working, I was working construction jobs, like rendering, bricklaying, or brickies labourer, you know, just mixing cement all day. No, there's nothing wrong with that, but it just wasn't right for me. Because I had this, you know, had all this creativity that I didn't have an outlet for.
Can't be too creative when it comes to laying bricks.
No, well, you get in trouble if you are. But I started making stencils on the side, just outside of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, never thought I'd be doing it full time. Not in a million years, but I just kept doing it, and then I'd get commissions, and then I picked up these public art mural jobs.
In Canberra?
Yeah, in Canberra.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, I'm missing a couple of years there. I got a job as a sign writer.
Okay.
So I did that for 2 years, which was actually beneficial. It was almost like doing an apprenticeship, because I never went to art school. Yeah. I've never studied art in any form. I don't think it's a fucking good idea. But doing it, you know, you're making signs. It's got to be perfect. You can't have scratches and shit in it.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the tools I picked up in that trade translated directly into the art I'm making now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so with stencil art, you said it wasn't until early 20s that you started getting into that. Was there anything, like, how did stencil art become a thing for you? Did you see someone else doing it, or?
To be honest, I had no outside influence, because I was growing up in Canberra before the days of the internet, so I didn't have that sort of wave of influence. But I just had a can of spray paint, and just remember thinking I should do something with that can of spray paint.
Mm.
And I cut out this stencil of Bill Hicks, because I was sort of listening to him at the time. Yeah. And I do remember pulling off the stencil and seeing this final piece, which at the time was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I've still got the piece and it's fucking terrible. But I just remember thinking, like, this penny dropped, and it's like, wow, there's something in that. I want to make another one. And then I made another one and another one. And I haven't stopped. It's, 15 years later?
And I assume that first stencil of Bill Hicks was pretty much just like a silhouette style, just like one can sort of thing.
Yeah, just one layer.
And I mean, I've seen what you do these days.
One layer and a layer of fucking overspray on the carpet in my bedroom.
Oh, right. Oh, you do on carpet?
I just fucking didn't know anything about spray paint, man.
I've seen what you do these days. It's obviously a little bit more complex compared to that first one that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
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 So, from a layer point of view, what's it look like now for someone that's not familiar with your work?
It's a lot more photorealistic these days. It's hard to say, because there's, in some paintings, there's up to 1,000 little different stencils, but there's only actually 4 layers broken into 250 different colours.
Mm.
Like the whole range of Molitor paint can use that in one painting, around about. If that makes sense.
A little bit.
Yeah.
For somebody that's just completely ignorant to art.
Yeah.
Frustrated, creative person that just can't quite get it out. No, it's I mean, I look at it and I go, how the hell can you create that out of stencil? Because I when I think of stencil, I think of, especially living in the inner west, you'd see someone get the stencil out, quickly spray paint something for a promotion or whatever and keep moving.
Fuck Tony Abbott.
Yeah. And so when you think of that sort of concept.
I've met Tony, actually.
Oh, have you?
He's actually a really nice guy.
Is he?
Yeah. I don't like his fucking policies or anything.
But he seemed to be quite personable.
It was interesting. I met him and Kevin Rudd on the same night. It was the time of the 11 when Rudd was re-elected after What's-the-Face. I sort of went into the meeting thinking Kevin Rudd is awesome and Tony Abbott's a cunt. But it was actually the other way around.
Oh, really?
Tony Abbott was just like completely different to what you see on the news.
Yeah.
Just fucking down to earth.
Kevin Rudd's got a bit of a reputation these days as a bit of a fire.
Kind of maniacal, man.
Yeah. A bit of a nutcase.
He came across as a bit of a sociopath.
Yeah. Wow. Was that around the time of Archibald stuff?
When was that? That was, I think it might have been
earlier.
Nah, that was maybe 12 months after. 12 months after I got into the Archie first time.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Oh, sorry, the only time.
Well, this is the first time.
It was the first time.
Yeah, that's right. You might be back. All right, we'll get to that in a moment. I'd love to hear a bit of Tony Abbott every once in a while, so
yeah.
I need to...
Oh, that's all I've got.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, I didn't know that. I just assumed that he'd be an asshole in person, but...
He's pretty fucking antiquated. Like, fair enough, you don't agree that homosexuals should get married.
Mm.
Keep it to yourself.
Yeah. Like, yeah, absolutely.
You're just embarrassing yourself by saying anything about it.
Yeah, now we'll steer clear of that because, 100%.
Let's talk about stencil art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So going back to the example of just seeing stencil art just quickly spray painted on the side of the road and whatnot, just trying to understand that basic concept into what you do now. There's a massive gap in between that and what you do now. But to see it more, I guess, as you said, more realistic, it's more sort of photo-based.
Well, I think the original stencils I did were single-layered political stencils because in Canberra, you're surrounded by politics. It's pretty much politics and heroin addicts. There's not much else going on. But I used to go out and spray these political stencils, and Canberra, as opposed to Sydney or Melbourne, where it's a small town and they've got council workers that just swim by and paint over shit as it happens. Sydney and Melbourne's kind of lost the war because there's so much going on. They just couldn't stay on top of it. So I kind of became frustrated with putting these stencils up just to come back the next day and they'd be painted over. Not even capped, just fucking gone.
Yeah.
So I think that's what motivated me to go back into the studio and refine the craft and do a two-layered stencil with 3, 4, 10, 20. That and being a little bit OCD, just wanted to see how far I could push it.
Push it, yeah.
Yeah.
To
extremes for some reason.
Oh, I mean, it's obviously got you to a point now that things are paying off, so...
Yeah.
It's been a...
I find these days I'm trying to stay directly in the middle all sort of, you know, trying to find balance instead of trying to find...
Well, it probably ties in with some of your yoga stuff and...
Yeah, it's kind of like... You spend your 20s trying to escape, and I'm spending my 30s trying to stay right fucking here.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So when you made that transition of, you know, doing stuff in public places and, you know, council or whatnot taking this away, were you doing stuff for yourself? Were you just creating art for your own... just to have it home? Were you giving it to friends, or how are you?
I gave most of it away.
Yeah.
Like, I never tried selling anything for a couple of years.
What was the first thing you sold?
I used to have I had a stall at the markets in Canberra. I think I did it twice, but I sold a painting for like $100. And I just remember thinking, wow, I'm an artist now. I've sold a painting.
I'm legit.
Yeah, I'm legit. I never have to work again. I can't remember what it was. I remember the person that bought it because she didn't know me, but I knew her because I did work experience for car detailing in year 10.
Yeah, wow.
Because they asked me what I wanted to be, and I think I wrote a race car driver. Just
Well, that's close.
Just as a smart ass stoner. What do you want to be? I want to be a race car driver. Fine, you can wash cars for a week. But she fired me. She was my boss at Workers' Friends, and she fired me.
And then she bought...
And she bought my first painting.
That's nice. Yeah. I like that. But she, as you said, like, she didn't...
She didn't remember me, yeah. But I remembered her. I was like, you fucking bitch. Like, I fell asleep in the lunchroom. You know, I'd never done a full day's work in my life. It was, you know... Not to mention how fucking boring it was.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, that's funny. I love that. So after you sold that first painting... And then going from there, I mean, you know, you only did 2 market stalls, you said. So
I think it was 2, yeah.
So how else did you get yourself out there? Like, what other things did you have to do to sort of get people to know what you were doing?
It's a good question. Like, I think in the early days, I gave every painting I did away to friends, whoever, anyone that said I liked that. So you can have it.
Mm.
I think that played a big part in getting my name out there, because at the end of the day, it's about getting your work out.
Yep.
You know, if you could sell... 100 paintings or you give them away, it doesn't matter, because I think people appreciate things so much more when you give it to them than when they buy it.
It's a bit more of a connection.
Yeah. Or maybe not, I don't know, but yeah, that's what sort of sparked the sort of rise in popularity. And then once getting onto social media, whatever year that was,
that probably would have made a massive difference.
Yeah.
Just getting your name out there, getting your work out there.
So. It's all kind of hazy, actually. everything before this morning is a bit of a blow.
I was, at that time, well, did you always think that you would get to a point where you would be doing this full-time or you wanted to do it? Or do you always just think this would be just something that you'd have on the side and you earn a little bit of money if you were lucky, but you would always have to just find a job elsewhere?
I think it was always... Ooh. Yeah, like it was always the goal to do it full time. Yeah. I didn't think it was ever going to be a possibility.
Yeah.
Because I did the songwriting for a bit and then I quit to do art full time. But that was just doing murals, which was just kind of like having a job. So I wanted to be exhibiting full time.
Yeah.
So I mean, I had to go back to work full time for 2 years. And make art on top of that. So it's kind of like working 2 full-time jobs for 2 years, which was hard work. But, then I had an exhibition, another one in Sydney, then one in Melbourne. And the one in Melbourne pretty much, I don't think it sold out, but I sold a lot of work. And that was the first time I'd had enough cash to just pack up and move to Melbourne. Because I remember being stuck in this debt cycle. It's the early mid-20s. I don't know. I think it's a Canberra thing. Or maybe it's just a me thing.
Yeah.
But, just being broke all the time. Because I think that was the sacrifice I made choosing to go into the arts.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're probably going to be poor for the rest of your life. Mm. And most of them are. Like, it's fucking hard to make a living off art. But, yeah, fortunately, I'm getting by.
So that first exhibit in Melbourne... The one that nearly sold out.
I don't think it nearly sold out, I think.
Or you just sold
it. No, I just don't remember it now. These people came and bought like 7 paintings. And if it hadn't have been for them, I wouldn't have sold anything.
Right, okay.
But,
was that enough to sort of validate what you were doing a bit more to sort of take that
sort of, so looking back, the Melbourne show was make or break. I was like,
okay.
If this doesn't work out, I'm just going to have to quit and go back to work because it's too fucking hard. Yeah, and these guys, Sandra and Andrew Powell, they're these big art collectors in Melbourne, bought like 7 pieces. So I owe a lot to them, actually, because if it wasn't for them, I probably wouldn't have had the impetus to move down to Melbourne and give it a shot.
Wow. Yeah.
So thanks, Sandra.
It's... doing the type of art that you do, because I know nothing about the art community. I try to put comparisons to like the music community and different genres and whatnot.
It's very similar.
Yeah. So the question that I'd have with that is, was the type of art that you do, were you getting criticism from other people that were in the art community doing different types of art?
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
Because I look at your stuff and it seems, it's more street. It's more sort of...
Man, it depends who you ask. It's almost like It doesn't fit in with the graffiti side of things. Yeah. It doesn't fit in with the contemporary art world, which I always saw as a bit of a hindrance. I just don't fit in anywhere. But now I'm starting to realise it's actually working in my favour that I don't fit in with them. I don't fit in on that side.
You cut through the noise.
Well, it's kind of like a fucking polyamorous relationship. If I would get sick of this contemporary art world, I'll go and do some street art. If I get sick of that, I'll have a gallery show. Like, street art and graffiti can get quite bitchy.
Yeah, okay.
Contemporary art world is fucking psychological warfare.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's horrible, man. It's fucking horrible.
So, have you had challenges getting your work put into places or even just getting sort of any sort of exposure just due to, I don't know, politics and the way that people look at your type of art in comparison to those genres of the community?
Yeah, I'm sure I have in the past. It's kind of water off a duck's back, but I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do my thing. If that doesn't fit in with someone else, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had trouble, though? Or is it just...
I'm just trying to think of a particular instance. Like, it was very hard to get it taken seriously by galleries in the early days. You know, a stencil artist from Canberra, you know, can I have a show in your gallery?
Yeah, how does that work? What do you do? Send them an email? Shoot a few paintings their way and sample art?
I was lucky enough to be picked up by Metro. I don't know. So I don't know if I was picked up on it. Yeah, I had a show with Metro Gallery in Melbourne because I was showing a lot of street art at the time from around the world. But it wasn't until I got into the Archibald that's when fucking everyone started paying attention.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a bit of legitimacy.
Oh, absolutely.
Tick. Yeah.
Well, it was being the first street artist, stencil artist to get into that prize. Yeah. The media just had a fucking field day.
It's like, pretty good.
Like, my face was the header of news.com for 24 hours. Every TV station, every radio station, every newspaper, front page. It was fucking terrifying.
Terrifying?
It was fucking terrifying. Like, it was the... You know, people say about kids, it's the best thing and the worst thing that can happen to you.
Yeah, right.
It was kind of like that.
Yeah.
Because it was, like, everything I'd wanted for so long, this recognition.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, there's people just coming out of the woodworks and just trying to, they just want to take advantage of you.
They want a piece of...
They want a piece, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, you need to put up a bit of a wall.
So...
Some horrible cunts out there. There's some really cool people too.
Yeah, but it's like anything. As soon as people can see there's an opportunity, then you've got people that are going to try and take advantage
of it. Yeah, I could make some money out of this idiot.
I mean, for that 24 hours initially, as you said, just being on that front page... Was it only a short burst, or has it sort of just been continuous since that point where you've just had that, you know, it's life has changed since that moment?
At the time, likening it to like a really strong LSD trip.
Yeah, right.
I was kind of like, wow, this is fucking heavy. This is too much, too much.
Did you feel the pressure? Or was it just unwanted attention that you were getting from...
I was getting people I went to primary school with contacting me. Hey, let's meet up, man. I didn't even know you, dude. I didn't even know you when I knew you. Like, fuck off, no. I'm a very introverted person.
Yeah.
Like, I like my own space.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're surrounded by people and you just want to get the fuck away from it. But then when you're surrounded by everybody, it's quite overwhelming. Like, I feel like if it happened now, I'd be much better equipped to deal with it. But at the time, I was... I didn't know what to expect, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they say. You give me... Yeah, careful what you wish for.
But surely you wouldn't... I mean, this is a silly word, but I'm just trying to think of a better word. But you wouldn't have regretted any of that at all, because it's obviously
put
you into the position that you're in.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just, I guess it's one of those unfortunate consequences that you got to deal with when getting recognition at that level.
Yeah, it's kind of like yoga. Like, it's not really that much fun doing it, but the way you feel afterwards is great.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I like it. What did you get nominated for that award?
Yeah, I just got in. I didn't fucking win or anything.
But I mean, obviously just being a finalist is... it doesn't matter if you win or not, I guess, when you get to
it
that.
It doesn't, nah. No. Once you're in the club, you're in the club.
You're in the club, yeah. In a circle.
I think so, I don't know. So everyone there's really nice, but it's kind of like you have to be, because fucking get rid of you if you're not. I don't mean that.
But do you get a letter or do you get an email or what's the go with something like that? Or, you know, how do you get approached? Is it because there's a certain criteria that you have to meet in the back end before they sort of pay attention to you and then reach out to you?
With what?
With a nomination.
You enter.
Yeah. So you threw your hat in the ring and went, all right, let's give it a go.
Give it a go, yeah. I was the first time I'd ever entered. Yeah, like, people go their whole fucking lives and never get in.
Did you have a lot of people giving you shit for that, though? As you said, like, you're the first of, I guess, your type of art.
I'm sure there were. I didn't pay attention to any of them. Nah.
Got nothing to lose, so...
Don't feed the trolls.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of different, like, in the sort of street art world, if someone's giving you shit, it means you might get your fucking head punched in.
Yeah.
If someone's giving you shit in the contemporary art world, it's just some fuckwit behind a computer, like... some art academic. Yeah. It's like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Fucking think whatever you want.
Usually it means you're doing something good anyway. If someone's putting that much energy into hanging shit on you, it usually means that you're a threat of some sort, or you're doing something that's...
Yeah.
That's rolling them up a little bit. So, you know, you must be on the right path one way or another.
I'm just doing my thing. Like, I've always been a bit self-conscious about being in this sort of contemporary art world, but like, never studied it.
Yeah.
Half the time I don't know what the fuck's going on. I'm just making what I make. I think just trying to document my existence and what I see and what I think, which is essentially the ethos of being an artist.
Yeah.
It's just one big I was here.
Leaving your footprint.
Yeah, I'm just sort of trying to capture life on the canvas. And
so when you're trying to, I guess, improve your skills and you said your OCD and whatnot and sort of making your work more and more complex as you went.
I haven't actually been diagnosed OCD.
No, but just using the term. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's all right. The plane's going a different direction. We'll keep that one in. But
it's good that you can tell which way they're going.
I'm watching them. Yeah, I'm eyeing them as they approach.
I could do that when I was watching TV. I could tell the ones taking off and the ones coming in.
Oh, there you go. Just fine tune your ear to it.
Just by the length of time the TV would cut out for.
I love it. Were you trying to learn from other people that were doing similar work to you, like internationally or whatever, just to try and get better at what you're doing? Or was it really trial and error that was getting you to the point that you're at now?
Because majority of it was trial and error.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever specifically tried to copy someone else, but I'm sure I've had much inspiration from many people.
Yeah.
So I think most inspiration is subconscious anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just a case of just repetition, just doing it over and over over a long period of time. And then as you
practice, you makes evolve, perfect.
Yeah, over that time. Okay. That's interesting. At what point did you start? Because obviously, you hinted at it before, being in Canberra, a lot of the stuff that you're doing initially was politically driven.
Yeah.
Has it always been the case with your work?
Not always. I think the early stuff is always a little bit tongue-in-cheek, a little bit. I don't know, I guess I tried to be confronting, maybe.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to be confronting, it was just
it's
that...
It's just who you were.
That's just
point.
Who I was at that point. Now, maybe less so. I don't know, I'm at a bit of a crossroads now with the work I've been making. Like, because of the trips to Syria and the photos I've been taking on my travels, I've sort of been documenting that through my artwork, but I don't know, I feel like maybe I should be saying something. Having a platform, maybe I should use it to speak up.
Maybe. At what point, because you mentioned Syria, and I'll get to that in a sec, because I find that fascinating, but... At what point did you sort of start to think about, I guess, getting out of your area and start looking at, I don't know, the world around you, as cliche as it sounds, but to start sort of travelling and sort of meeting different people and then, I guess, melting that into what you do as well? Was Syria the first thing, or was there other...
No, not at all. I don't think I went overseas for the first time until I was about 29 or 30.
Yeah, okay.
Just getting back to that fucking debt cycle I was stuck in.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I guess these sort of new patches open up, or these, you know, the world opens up, sort of with the success I had, financially. So, yeah, I just think new experiences sort of harbored new motivations or new inspirations.
Are you searching for that, as far as you're doing it with the purpose of getting more inspiration, getting more colour into, not literal colour, but like just more context and texture into what you do?
No, not consciously.
No.
Like, I didn't sit down and think, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to get more inspiration. It's inspiration just comes with what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the first, you said late 20s was the first time you went overseas?
Yeah, yeah.
Where'd you go?
I went to all around Southeast Asia.
Okay, yeah.
I think Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam.
For first time overseas, that would have been a bit of a culture shock.
Yeah, it was. I did one of those trips where you just try and fit too much in.
Yeah, okay.
And just come back completely burnt out. I don't know, I try not to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Just fucking one place. Spend a bit of time there and come back. I don't know, maybe I was just making up for lost time.
Yeah.
Just trying to fit everything in.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you doing any art when you were over there on that first trip, or was it sort of later trips that you started doing some stuff while you're overseas?
I didn't go there to make art. I did do a few stencils there, a couple in Ho Chi Minh City. Yeah. But I didn't do much.
No.
No. Holidays is about me. It's not about making art.
Trying to be present.
I'm trying to get away from making art.
Break.
I don't know if that's the best attitude to have. I should be like busting to get overseas to make art, but I'm just not that way inclined.
Yeah.
It seems to be a whole movement of muralism at the moment. Everyone traveling the world to make these big ass murals, but I don't know. I'm just not that interested in becoming that big
kind of. Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you've already sort of got to a level of success, but also sufficient, like you're self-sufficient in what you do, and
yeah,
a model that seems to work.
Well,
for
it's
you.
About trying to retain a bit of balance.
Like, yeah,
everyone thinks success is about being the fucking best or the most famous.
Yeah,
I can't think of anything more horrible.
It just seems that there's more things that you have to worry about.
Oh, for sure. Like, for all the good shit that blows up, there's all the bad shit that blows up too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, trying to find a middle road and not...
You've got that sweet spot at the moment, so it's just trying to
just
maintain that.
Maintain. If I can do that for another 30 years, I'll be happy.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, yeah. 30 years of balance, especially. Well, how long have you been doing yoga for, Ben? Is that sort of been?
I've been doing
things?
It for a couple of years. I've been doing it pretty heavy for the last couple of months.
Yeah,
yeah.
Has that been sort of one of those things to try and maintain that balance, is by doing something like that to try and level yourself?
Yeah, just like I was saying before, I'm just starting to take care of myself a lot better now than I ever did in the past. Yeah, not trying to escape, trying to remain present.
Is that a struggle?
No, not at all. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
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 Just trying to, I don't know. Just, I'm not.
I guess.
Ask that question again. I just had a mental block.
No, is it a struggle to remain present? But I guess it probably wouldn't be for you so much compared to other people. I'm just having a guess because of the fact that you have to sit there and do art. That requires a level of discipline and focus where you can't just afford to do something for 30 seconds and walk off and do something else.
You spend 80 hours a week in the fucking zone.
Yeah,
like, it's not easy.
So you got to be present.
I don't want to complain about being an artist, but it's not easy.
No. Well, if it was easy, then everyone would be doing it.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's only 2% of artists actually make it.
Yeah.
It's because it's fucking hard work. I think a lot of people get into the arts out of seeing it as some sort of soft option. It's like, oh, mum says I'm artistic, I'll go into the arts. Mum says I'm a good painter.
Or it's that romantic sort of vision of what a stereotypical artist would be, you know?
Yeah.
And so they're drawn to that more so than the reality of what you probably need to do on a day-to-day basis to maintain something.
I think, you know, much to my benefit, I have the experience of a work ethic, and I worked all these shitty jobs that I hated, and I don't see being an artist as my right. I don't think it's anyone's right to be an artist. I think it's a privilege that I've earned.
Yeah.
So I don't want to fuck this up. So I'm putting everything into it just to maintain. Anyone can get it, but keeping it going.
Keeping it going is a big thing.
It's not easy.
Well, from my point of view, I've always loved the idea of drawing.
Yeah.
And I've been a frustrated drawer, but I will spend 30 seconds to a minute doing something, and if it looks crap, then I've thrown the pad across the room and I'll go and do something else.
That's exactly what I'm like.
And that's what most people are like. Yeah. And I think anyone that can just get past that barrier and stick at something.
Oh, no, I've still got that barrier.
Like, yeah.
I don't really like anything that I paint. I just look at it and think, fuck, it could be better. So I'll make another one. I think that's where the perfectionism comes from. It's trying to make.
How do you know when to
stop then? I haven't stopped. I just start a new one. You don't stop, you abandon.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I like that. because there'd no doubt be cases in the past where you've probably spent too much time on something and you probably ruined something because you've just been trying to make it too perfect, maybe?
Probably, yeah. I find more I'll finish something, look at it for a minute and go, that's fucking amazing. Then look at it for another minute and go, actually, that's kind of shit. And then I'll hate it. And I'll look back at it 5 years later and think, well, that's actually really good.
Yeah.
Why am I so fucking hard on myself? That's not bad.
A bit of hindsight.
Yeah.
So Syria, I'll touch on this. How on earth did that happen? Same sort of thing. Did you throw your hat in the ring for an opportunity, or did somebody approach you with this idea and this concept to get over there? It's not the easiest place in the world to get to.
No, it's not. Well, let's go back 20 years.
Yep.
The first exhibition I ever saw was in high school. An artist named George Giddos. Okay. He's an Australian conflict artist. It was one of those art exhibitions you see that just changes you. It's like, wow. Like, it was just so inspiring. And again, I had that thing in my head. It's like, I'd love to do that one day. I'd love to be a war artist. But also having another voice in my head saying, that's never going to happen.
What sort of art was he doing?
Very sort of impressionistic.
Okay.
Paint splatters and chalk and cheese to what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm friends with George now.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was always in the back of my mind. And I went to Lebanon in 2012, trying to get over to Syria when the conflict just started. But a little naive, I thought I could just rock up and go to Syria. But it doesn't work like that. But I painted a portrait of this guy called Father Dave Smith, because ANZ Bank contacted me and said, can you pick someone in society that you think is making a positive contribution and paint a mural of them, and we'll give you a fuckload of money. Sure, I can do that. So I've been boxing with him. He's Australia's oldest professional boxer.
Wow.
So I've been boxing with him for a little bit, and I painted him. We sort of struck up a friendship. But he'd been going to Syria. He'd been twice since the conflict began, and he was going back, taking a group of boxers to box with, you know, do workshops with children and exhibition bouts with the Syrian Olympic team.
Okay.
So I put my hand up and said, yeah, I can't box for shit. But I just fucking wanted to get over there. I was actually more scared of boxing in Syria than I was of going to Syria.
Going to Syria?
But luckily enough, I broke my rib before we were going to go.
So you didn't participate?
Well, the cameraman from SBS was going to come, but he pulled out. So I stepped in to film for him.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I went over there to film and, just take photos, make work. And it was such a life-changing experience, just meeting so many amazing people.
At that stage, did you understand, I guess, what you were walking into? Or even just, the risk and...
I knew the risk, yeah.
Yeah.
But no one understands till you get there.
Yeah.
Seeing You only hear one side of the story on the news, and hearing another side when you get there. It's such a head fuck, man. So I went back 6 months later by myself. I'm not by myself. There's this Irish guy who organised people to go over.
Yeah.
And I went with him, this crazy Irish guy. And that was kind of better for me, because going with Father Dave was, say, interfaith religious and political press conferences and fucking meetings and shit, which is great for him because he wants to get that publicity for what he's doing, and he's genuinely trying to help and trying to build bridges, and it's very respectable. But I want to fly under the radar. I'm not interested in making any noise about it. So I thought going with this Irish guy would be a little bit easier, and it was good. You know, we went up to Aleppo, went up to Homs, and it's fucking intense. Like, we got caught in Damascus. There was an aerial bombardment when I was staying in there's fucking mortars getting shot into the old city where we were staying, and
there'd be nowhere safe. Like, you just
wouldn't know.
That's
not safe. Like, there were 3 suicide bombings within a week, within a kilometre of the hotel. 120 people killed.
Wow.
That was nuts, but, you know, I got to go home. Look, I'm only here for 2 weeks. I get to go home soon. These people have to stay here. You know, the kids I was working with, they're like 4 or 5 years old. They've never known anything. That's all they know.
That's it.
And everyone's like, you're so brave for doing that. Nah, not at all.
Yeah.
It's fucking scared shitless most of the time.
Did you guys stand out like a sore thumb over there?
Yeah. Not too much. It's people ask these stupid fucking questions. Like,
oh, sorry.
Not you. But people say things like, "Do you see women in the street?"
Oh.
It's like, it's no different than going to Bankstown.
Yeah.
Like, it's.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Like,
yeah.
They're the people that do the same things.
People are thinking of Taliban, Afghanistan, or Saudi Arabia.
Hmm.
It's nothing like that.
Yeah.
It's a very progressive society. It's very secular. I don't know. I don't want to get too political.
No, that's cool. I think the reason why I asked the question was more so, you know, I guess what you see on the news with, you know, journos getting kidnapped and people being targets that aren't locals.
Oh, yeah, I was in a lot of danger. You kind of have to prepare yourself for the fact that you might not come back.
Yeah.
But at the time, I didn't really give a fuck if I came back or not.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can sort of come to terms with that. Yeah. I get more anxiety going to Broadway Shopping Centre than I did in the centre of Aleppo.
it's pretty bad there. Especially in the car park.
Oh, it's too much fucking noise. Yeah. It's just claustrophobic. It's like, I've got to get out of here. But it's more that when you know what you're afraid of, it's a lot easier to sort of use that energy or accept that energy. But when you just have constant simulation coming from everywhere and you don't know what the fuck's happening, it's a lot easier to sort of panic.
It's probably like just giving up to what you can control and what you can't control, maybe to a degree. Because you're kind of knowing the difference.
You just kind of say, inshallah. That was what I used a lot over there, inshallah.
Yeah.
It's like, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen. When there's mortars coming in all around the hotel, like, yeah, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And that's...
place, wrong time.
Well, that's the sort of general consensus with everyone I met over there. It's like, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Yeah. I can't control it. I can't leave here either. So...
how did that go with, you just said for yourself, you'd gone through that mentally to work yourself out going over there, so you didn't care as much because you knew that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. But how did that go with friends and family and whatnot, knowing that you're going over there? What was the sort of conversations?
I don't think I even told them, actually.
You just went?
I just went. it's a lot easier to get...
Where is he? Oh.
Yeah, where'd Luke go?
By the way.
Yeah. They'll work it out if I don't come back. No, I think I told Mum. Mum's cool. Like, Mum doesn't want me to go, but she understands that it's my life and I need to do what I want to do. Yep. So she certainly wouldn't tell me not to.
Mm.
Everyone else can get fucked. So Mum's the only person who would really sort of listen to it. She said, please don't do this.
Then you're going to listen, but...
Yeah.
What? At least listen to a degree. Take it on board.
Mum's always been pretty open-minded, like, is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after that... So you've touched on both trips there. So going over with a group and then going over with more or less yourself, but with an Irish guy.
Yeah, a couple of other... There was Irish guy, another Irish artist. He's like ex-IRA and he's one of his mates. He's like, I think he was his bodyguard or something. He was just make sure he didn't... They were both fucking ex-IRA. Like, and this other young Irish anarchist kid.
Just to add another dynamic to the mix.
Mate, it was the most fun I've ever had with those two.
Wow.
They were amazing. We had dinner in this little... We got to Aleppo and it was 11 o'clock at night and this person said, we were looking to get dinner. It's like, this fucking city's bombed out. There's just nothing there. And this guy's like, yeah, go up there, turn right, and there'll be a little cafe thing. So we must have gone up and turned left and then got lost, me and these two ex-IRA guys. And this soldier standing out in front of this building is like, what are you doing? He's looking for food to come in. And this, it was like a restaurant for the Syrian Arab Army.
Right, okay.
So, not a restaurant, but like a canteen, sort of cafeteria. This dark building, with candlelit dark building. It was like something out of Berlin in the 40s. And anyway, it was exciting, but a bit scary at the same time. So I was like, oh, can I take your photo? No. Can I take your photo? No. But they said, come in, sit down, just wait here. Yeah. And we waited for about at least an hour and thinking, what the fuck's going on? And then they brought out this buffet of food, like hummus, breads, chicken salad, fucking... It's typical sort of Syrian, Middle Eastern cuisine.
Yeah.
Just scratched up out of nothing.
Wow.
It was great.
Just laid it out.
What was the question again?
I have no idea.
Okay.
No.
I can't remember why I was talking about that.
No.
With these guys. Like, it was just... We were just laughing the whole time. It's so funny. Like,
I mean, for those guys, given their background, understanding conflict to a degree...
Yeah, yeah.
Being over there, I mean, I'm sure they would have seen some parallels in some certain aspects, but, wow, to be surrounded by so many people with experience in forms of conflict. I mean, did you feel like a duck out of water?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I'm just the guy from Canberra who has a stall at the market sometimes.
Like, does some stencil art.
hopes he doesn't have to get a job sometime soon. Yeah, I did feel like a fish out of water. I was just random whitey walking around. Yeah. But I didn't in the way that I was so appreciated that I was there, the people that I was spending time with, like the locals, because the country relied on tourism before the conflict. So seeing a Westerner come over, because like the hotel we stayed in Aleppo, I signed the guest book and it hadn't been signed for 7 years. I was first person.
Wow.
Or maybe it was 5 years, either or.
It was a long time.
But yeah, sort of seeing Westerners come back gives them the sense that maybe... Maybe things are returning to normal, And I think the war is starting to wind down there.
Well, it's not getting... I mean, from our point of view, where we live in the world, we're only seeing it from, as you said before, like one particular angle.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be flavour of the month as it probably was a while back. There seems to be other distractions out there at the moment. But so you only sort of know...
North Korea is next.
But... Yeah, it seems, I guess, from a media point of view, that's quietened down, but no doubt it continues on there.
And it will for a long time. It's never going to go away. Not while there's still oil under the sand. But it's such a dirty fucking war. Like, the propaganda coming out of that place. Yeah. Everyone wants me to comment on what I think's going on. To be honest, I think they're all as bad as each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fucking propaganda war.
Yeah.
And regardless if you want to start in power or not, like, I don't know if Assad is necessarily a bad guy, but the people driving the machine behind him, not nice people.
Yeah.
And that's how you keep power, by being a bit of a cunt.
Yeah.
But, you know, the people fighting them are no fucking better.
Yeah. Did you worry about giving your opinion?
I fucking wouldn't say a word over there. No way. No way.
So, but you mentioned that people would ask you?
More back here. People want to know what's going on. Yeah, are you pro Asada or are you not? It's like, A, that's none of your fucking business. Yeah. And B, I think the country's... I might be wrong. I'm not an expert on geopolitics, but from my opinion, from travelling there, I think he has got a huge percentage of support with the people. And without him in power, it's going to turn into fucking Taliban Afghanistan. It's going to turn into Saudi Arabia. It's going to be run by Muslim extremists.
We'll see what's happening.
Yeah. Syrian women are some of the most beautiful in the world. As soon as Assad goes, cover up.
Yeah.
We don't want to see your skin anymore. You know, you can't drive car anymore. You can't go to school anymore.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Was it after the first trip or the second trip where you were... Because I read that you were trying to get a few sort of projects in line with trying to help the kids over there and getting art supplies and whatnot. Was that after the first trip or the second
trip? That was after the second trip.
Yeah.
So I had a fundraiser in Melbourne in 3 months ago, whatever that was, August or something, September?
Yeah, about that.
Can't remember. Yeah, so I raised 40 grand for Syrian kids.
Not bad.
Yeah, I had 50 artists donated a painting, 50 Australian street artists, all very generously donated a painting, and we had a silent auction down in Melbourne, and raised some money, which is sitting in my bank account.
Nice.
I haven't spent it. No, it's... The plan was to take it over in cash, which is such a exciting, romantic idea, but when it came to actually doing that, it was like, that's the most stupid fucking thing I've ever thought. It's like 40 grand cash.
Might be a few risks involved.
Hey, if I didn't get arrested leaving Australia, like, you know...
There's a few roads.
Anyone would have fucking stopped. Would have been taken by customs in Lebanon. Would have been taken at the Syrian border. It wasn't even fucking terrorists that were taking it. The fucking soldiers would have said, that's mine now. Thank you. Yeah.
Could be seen as funding.
Shukran, Habibi.
Oh, man. So I read that you were doing some earlier fundraising where you were trying to get people to donate and PayPal was restricting.
So that was the second. Yeah, my PayPal's been cancelled. I can't use PayPal anymore.
And
do you know how fucking stressful that is?
I rely on PayPal, so if I don't have it.
Well, I was supposed to go to Syria 3 weeks ago. I was supposed to go back.
Wow.
So I've organised to meet up with an NGO in Damascus, children's charity.
Yep.
So I have to go there, meet them, and see that they're actually doing what they say they're doing before I can donate the money to them.
Right.
Because if I donate 40 grand to someone in Damascus, turns out they're a fucking rebel faction, I go to jail.
A lot of responsibility. That's pressure.
That's pressure, yeah. It's kind of exciting when it's not a reality, but when it comes to reality, you're like, fuck, I don't want to go to jail. I really don't.
Are you doing, as you said, you have to go over there, actually observe what they're doing, vet it, and then make that decision of...
Then come back and transfer the money to them.
Are you using other people to sort of help you go through this process? Because...
This time I'm not.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm getting... The visas are being set up through the charity.
Yeah,
but okay. I've got enough friends in Damascus not to need a fixer when I get there. Yeah. Yeah, but first and second time I went, there were people helping me out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems so intense to think about just any money being sort of transferred around the place. And I mean, just I think now, anything that's not through PayPal is just scary in general, even if you're just transferring between mates. But to do in a little bit more hostile and volatile parts of the world, just the risks and I guess the perception and the consequences of it going in the wrong direction is just
oof. Yeah, they cancelled my PayPal a couple of weeks ago and my fucking life shut down. I can't buy anything on eBay.
Yeah.
All of my Netflix, every account I've got set up.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Everything was shut down. So all of these emails coming in, this hasn't been paid, this hasn't been paid, this hasn't been paid. I'm like, fuck. And so it was kind of stressful. Oh. But yeah, you know, these things happen.
Just one of the things that you're just going to have to cop. And it makes it part of the interesting story in hindsight later on down the track when it all...
This is one fucking idiot. I said... I put out a thing saying, if anybody... I'm heading to Aleppo. If anyone wants to donate 10 or 20 bucks for art supplies for kids, yep, that'd be really cool. And I'm sort of caveat at the bottom saying, do not write Syria in the description.
Hmm.
First fucking payment, Syria.
No.
Yeah, it's like that one word, it just fucking made my life so much more difficult.
And it's just, I guess it's from a PayPal point of view, they're trying to, I guess, blanket approach anything with that keyword in the that they're eliminating possibilities of funding terrorism.
Yeah, I don't know. Zionists. Maybe, I might be wrong, I don't know.
Oh man, scary stuff.
It is, when you sort of see the bigger picture, so when you're in the middle of it, it does things to your head, man. You kind of got this intuition about what's actually happening. It's really hard to explain, but you sort of see this correlation, this connectivity between everything. Like, you know, the shit, the plastic in the oceans, excessive consumerism, gluttony, greed, cigarette butt gets flicked out the window, fucking dolphin chokes on it, dolphin dies, fucking, you know, this plastic's come from this oil that's been pulled out of the ground, but we can't pull it out of the ground, so we fuck these people off.
That's right, everything's linked.
Everything's linked, and you start to get this insight. I want this to inform my art practice, don't know how to get it on canvas.
Crossroad that you have now.
Yeah. Just trying to document that. I'll make some sense of it in some way, but I don't know. Maybe I did too many drugs in my 20s to actually fucking work that out.
This is something you're probably going to be always trying to work out as life moves on, but is it something where you're trying to hope that you can educate people in the Western world, back home, or is it more of a case of what I can do to help the people that are there, or is it just a balance of it all, just try and see what you can do for everybody? Or just not trying to help anyone at all, just painting.
Just fucking help myself, I think.
Just help yourself.
No,
you gotta help yourself first.
I'd love to be able to help everybody, but it's not realistic, man. No. And I don't think it's necessary either. Like, seeing firsthand how the aid industry fucks these countries.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the time it does more damage than it does good.
Yeah.
And seeing the sort of the people that everyone in Syria has an agenda. Mm. Like, everyone, I don't know if helping makes them feel good or makes them look good, but a lot of the time it's more about them than it is the actual people they're helping.
That's it.
It's kind of gross, man. Yeah. It's like, I was reading this story about the textiles industry in Kenya used to be thriving, and then they get all these secondhand market clothes from America.
Mm.
No one needs to buy clothes anymore because we get it free from these Christians. So the fucking textiles industry shuts down.
Yeah.
The cotton farmers shut down. The whole fucking economy collapses because we give them our fucking old Cuda Lines jumpers. We're not helping people by giving them shit. We need to stop. And you know, people say immigration, we need to help these people. No, we don't. We need to help them in their own country, because we don't take the fucking bottom of the ladder. We take the doctors, we take the lawyers, we take the people that can actually execute some sort of change in this country.
That's it.
And leave the...
It's a contribution.
Yeah, we leave the uneducated ones there to fend for themselves.
And really, I mean, I guess if anyone's going to help, it's going to be educating and providing resources that are going to be beneficial for them locally in their community. That ties in with their culture as well.
Yeah. Like, don't send them food. Don't send them rice.
Yeah.
Give them the tools they need to make their own. Give them the education they need. I don't know if that's a simplistic view of it, but...
But sometimes the most simplistic way of looking at things is the right way of looking at it. You know, sometimes people overcomplicate things and want it to look complicated because this is, you know, people having agendas. They want people to be able to look at them and say, wow, this person is really doing this amazing work, and it seems so intricate and full on, and you know, I could never do that, and so suddenly you've got the little tick against your name, you've got the validation, the accolades and whatnot, but it's not really having any.
Well, they're fixing the symptoms, not fixing the cause.
Yeah.
It's like me painting over my chicken pox with a beige marker. They're not going anywhere.
Pretending it's not there. That's
right. It's going to rub off. Yeah, so there's that.
So what's... I mean, you mentioned that you were going to go to... You were hoping to go to Syria a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So what's the next 12 months look like for you?
I've started the visa application. Yep. Well, I didn't go. I had a few security concerns last time because I raised this $40,000 and the crazy Irish cunt found out about it. And he's like, oh, it's your money. You can do what you want with it. It's my best Irish accent. And then I get a fucking email the next day. You need to send me $8,000 today to do heart surgery on kids in Damascus. And you CC'd all these Assad representatives. And I was like, oh, don't, mate. And then I found out he's using my image to raise money for himself.
Wow,
you just fucked everything. And it was pretty stressful because I had a few people, like I had a cameraman coming. I had the girl that I did the project with, she was coming. And I didn't want to let him down, but I just had to cancel. It was too much. But I'm fucking glad I did, actually.
Yeah, wow.
Because I won the People's Choice at the Salon de Refuse a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, congrats.
Yeah, cheers.
Yeah.
But it was almost like getting to that level, I just kind of started saying no to things. So I don't have to do this.
That's and a good position like, to be in.
I don't have to do anything.
That's good.
So I said no, and then I said no to something else, and now I'm just fucking saying no to everything.
And now you can...
Except you, mate.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers. But it gives you focus... Well, it gives you the opportunity to focus on things that actually matter to you, that you give a shit about, instead of just saying yes to everything and then just being pulled in every direction and diluting everything.
Yeah.
You can put energy into the things that matter.
Yeah. Well, I'm having a little show in Canberra at the end of February.
Yeah.
And then an exhibition in Sydney in August.
Okay.
So I'm going to do that. Yeah, doing the visa application. So I'll go back to Damascus by myself at some point. But I don't think I'll do a big trip. I think maybe just go to Damascus and come back.
Yeah.
I don't need to burn out anymore. In saying that, I am organising a trip to Iraq. It's gone.
Because
I've got all these pencil cases. The school in Kumar, the art teacher contacted me and said, we're going to do a drive with the kids to organise getting pencil cases for kids in the Middle East.
Okay.
If you want to take them with you. And I said, yeah, sure. So I've got fucking 300 pencil cases full of shit in my studio. It's constant guilt trip. Fuck, I've got to take them to Syria.
Just staring at you from the outside of the room.
I said I'd do it, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to go to Iraq, maybe go up to Mosul.
Yeah.
It's just been taken back from Islamic State. I think, like, I do get a lot of excitement going to these places. I find it really interesting, but I feel like maybe Iraq's a bit less of a head fuck, because Iraq, you're either a good guy or a bad guy.
Yeah.
Syria, there's so many different shades of grey, and every one of them is calling you a cunt because you don't agree with them. So, I've got many friends there now that I really want to go back and see, but I think I might just have to wait till this war dies down a bit.
Just give it a bit of time.
I don't want to go there. I want to go there as a tourist. I don't want to go there as an artist.
Not with an agenda.
Not with an agenda at all. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, cool. So,
I don't mind those people knowing I've got chicken pox.
No, that's all right. I'll cut
it's
that
nothing to be ashamed of. It doesn't have the stigma attached to it that it used to be.
We can do a post. I'll do a post episode follow up and just let the audience know whether you actually contracted chicken pox or not.
Okay. Fucking
stay tuned.
Bad timing, man. I put a thing on Instagram yesterday of the painting I did and said, "That's enough painting for 2017. Happy holidays, everybody." Fucking first day off in fuck knows how long.
He just contracted
chicken pox. Yeah.
Your body's like, yep, sweet. Yeah. All right, let's.
It's God's way of saying, no, you're going to have some time off now.
So, going back to what we were saying before, you mentioned, I mean, obviously, you've had a bunch of hairy moments being in Syria, but you were going to tell me about getting arrested, or you were almost arrested?
No, I was arrested.
You actually arrested?
In Damascus, yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's with that young Irish guys. Their fucking weekends are funny. Like, Friday and Saturday is their weekend.
Yeah.
So it was Friday, and it was just dead. There was no one around in the old city, so we thought we'd just go for a walk. And we kind of strayed off the path a bit, and we're sort of walking towards this checkpoint. It's actually the checkpoint was hit by a suicide bomber three days earlier. 60 people killed. And these two fucking random white guys walking around with their cameras out.
This mag.
This soldier's come up with his fucking AK-47. It's like, ugh. He's trying to motion. We thought he was saying passport. Where's your passport? Okay. But he's saying, where's your paper?
Yeah.
So we had our passport. And he's like, no, where's your paper? Because you need...
Was it like a permit or something?
Yeah, it's a letter from the government saying that you have permission to be in the country.
Right.
Because it's under martial law.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we didn't have that. The person at the hotel had our papers. And we didn't have phone coverage, so we couldn't call anybody. And we didn't speak Arabic, so we couldn't speak to anybody. They're like, fucking come with us. And it was bizarre. Like, I remember there was a couple of Hezbollah guys there. You can tell the Hezbollah ones because they're so fucking immaculately dressed.
Yeah, right, okay.
Like the hairs down in the beards. Yeah. I remember looking at him, just because he had his fucking AK-47, suit, and he's just really well dressed. I just remember thinking, that is the coolest motherfucker I've ever seen. He was just so cool.
While he's taking you away.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they let us down this alleyway, up this fucking stairwell, up like this hidden sort of office. This dude just sitting there, and you know, it's just thinking, no, this is cool. They're gonna sort it out. We're allowed to be here, and it just sort of fucking spiraled into this. Imagine four guys screaming in Arabic. Arabic's a fucking intimidating language when they're being nice to each other.
Yeah,
when they're screaming, it's just fucking terrifying. And this one guy kept coming in and going out and coming in and going out, screaming and staring at us. And he pulled out his fucking pistol, took out two bullets.
And they're screaming at you guys?
At the guy behind the desk.
Oh, at the guy. Okay, right.
Because from what it felt like, the guy behind the desk was like, no, we can't kill them. We have to work out who they are.
Right.
And this guy's coming in saying, we don't have time for this shit. Just fucking kill them and chuck them in a dumpster. And he's taken out his pistol, took out two bullets and just put them on the bench and then walked out. No, this cannot be fucking happening, man. And that went on for about 2 hours.
Oh, man.
And then they put us in the back of a truck and drove us to an army base outside the city. And like, I met this girl and she was saying her brother was arrested in Damascus and held without charge for 2 years.
Oh.
So I was just thinking,
it's almost better just to be done with on the spot than have 2 years of mental torture, to put it at the least.
You know, some of the Syrian Arab army people that I've met are the nicest guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's soldiers in any country. They do what they're fucking told.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but once we got to the base, there was the general there and they had someone who spoke English and they went through all the cameras and they went through all the phones and saw that we weren't a threat.
Mm.
And once they sort of ascertained that we weren't a threat, they were cool.
Okay.
I was like, it's all good, you're going to go home. But yeah, just that sort of 4 or 5 hours when I didn't know if I was going to get shot in the head.
It's like an A380 flying over. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't believe how intense it would be.
Yeah, it was pretty intense.
Did you actually think, did you have that moment where you thought, this is probably it?
No, you never sort of... I didn't sort of give up hope and think I'm going to die. There's always a voice in your back head saying, it's going to be all right, it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
Don't panic, don't panic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that like a sense of denial or something that just keeps you going through it? Just
probably, yeah. Oh, man, this isn't happening.
I guess just given how... I mean, it's like, as you said before, any soldier from any country, any background, there's a level of being desensitized to conflict.
Oh, yeah.
And to... death and whatnot, because it's just around them all the time. So for, as you said, that scenario of potentially one of those guys just saying, just get it over and done with, move them along, literally, and let's get on with what we're meant to be doing.
Yeah. These guys are under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Like, constant suicide attacks. They're not going to take any chances, and nor should they, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any animosity towards those people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're just doing the best they can under the circumstances.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So when you guys, after they turned around, they sort of tried to calm it down, like, yeah, no, it's all good now, and you know, you guys aren't a threat.
Yeah.
Did they just lead you back out in the street and let you go?
No, they drove us back to the hotel.
Yeah.
It must have been the general or someone. Yeah. Because every soldier on the way, like, bear in mind, there's checkpoints every 500 meters.
Okay.
Everyone stopped what they were doing and saluted this man.
Oh.
It was bizarre, and we're just sitting in the back
seat. Some kingpin sitting here, wow.
It's like, we're with this cunt. Yeah, he's a mate.
Did you feel safe by that point, or were you still on edge just going, like, they're telling us we're okay, but just not 100%?
No, I felt 100% safe after that.
Yeah. So, was that just for the rest of the trip after that? Like, it was just enough of a shock to the system?
No, fuck no, man. I didn't go outside by myself after that.
Yeah.
Fuck no way.
Was that early in the trip, or was it sort of towards the end?
It was one of the last days.
Okay.
So I was pretty glad to get out of there.
Yeah.
Like, you never feel safe. Like, it's a war zone.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But I felt secure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's just... I can't even fathom what that's like. I mean, I've done a lot of travelling, and I've certainly been in situations where you're dealing with someone with a different background, different language, and some people that may initially come across as being a threat. So somebody might be juiced up on something, or somebody's a little bit aggressive with you, and you just can't quite work them out. You don't know how to approach them and how to interact with them. But not to that level.
No.
That's next level.
Yeah, they're just... They're ordinary guys.
Yeah.
They're just normal guys. I stayed at this hotel in Beirut. It's like in the southern suburbs of Beirut. It's like Hezbollah territory. And this hotel is next to the hospital. So all the people going to fight ISIS in Iraq come back to get patched up in the hospital and then stay at the hotel.
Yeah.
And it was when I first got there, I was sitting in the foyer and these four guys came in, just come back from Iraq. Like, no legs, no arms. Ooh. One guy had his fucking bottom half of his face blown off.
Ooh,
and I just remember thinking, I fucking can't do this, man. This is too heavy. But you give him a nod, salam alaikum.
Yeah.
And you sort of, the prejudice sort of comes down and you just sort of see them as normal people.
That's it.
Yeah. These guys aren't, well, they are kind of soldiers from the Middle East, but they're no different to you and I.
It's that that concept that a lot of people talk about. So in the end, regardless of your background, you know, cultural differences and whatnot, everyone needs the same stuff, the same basic needs.
Yeah.
So we're all after ultimately the same thing:
like food, shelter, and sex.
Yeah, that's it. And everyone's got their own unique way of getting to those points, and or their theories of how they get to it. But everyone needs those same things. So once people understand that connection, that basic human survival connection...
Is it the hierarchy of needs, isn't it?
That's it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
After that incident, have you sort of looked at international travel in general in a different light? Like, I guess leading up to that point where that guy pulled you guys in... Like, did you guys feel that you were the silly white guys standing around in an area that you shouldn't be, or hear those horror stories about journalists just totally disrespecting an area or not having the awareness?
It was interesting because the second, like within seconds of it happening, I said to the guy I was with, because it's happened a couple of times. Like, I remember saying, you know, every time you feel like you're safe, something happens to remind you that you're in a complex zone. Because the first time I went, we were staying in this hotel and I was with this boxer, Nigerian guy, fucking jet black with the beard and no moustache. He's just got ISIS written all over him. And we're like, so we'll go for a walk, try and find some Wi-Fi. And we're just walking down the street and we're like, this is amazing. Like, the people are so cool. Mm. It's great. Just really kind of... surprised at how much of a good time we're having. And then this guy steps out of fucking nowhere with a fucking Kalashnikov and points it at us and just looks at us and says, fuck off, waves us off with a gun. Just turn around and go, oh fuck. And we get back to the hotel and they're like, what are you thinking, you're a fucking white guy, You're a fucking brown-skinned man who looks like a fucking, you know, African militant.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look like whitey fucking sympathizer. You just look like ISIS.
So scary.
I remember, just turning around and walking away, just waiting to hear bump, bump, bump. But
I would have just shat myself. Actually, I don't know what the hell I would have done. Because you wouldn't know. I mean, you wouldn't know until you're in that moment, really.
No.
As to how you're going to react to something.
I don't know. I guess for the amount of times that's happened, I'm so proud of myself, but...
Held it together.
Yeah, held it together all right. Because when I got arrested, I had a pack of this Xanax in my pocket. I had it just in case I needed it. Because after the first trip, it was like, things happen that can shake you up.
Mm.
I didn't actually have one the whole time.
Right.
So.
Probably just having them there is just...
Yeah, that little safety zone. Yeah. If I need to tap out, I'm tapping
you
out.
You knew it was there, ready to go.
Yeah. But, I think red wine's enough. don't need to knock yourself out. But yeah, I just remember thinking, I'm kind of glad I didn't have to resort to chemicals to handle this stuff.
Are you on... And we can edit this out if it's a bit of a
sensitive thing. Oh, no, I'm all about honesty.
Yeah, sweet. Okay, are you on, like, the watch list for the Australian government? As far as, you know, I don't know what they call it, the formal registry or whatever, but anybody that's sort of travelling to the Middle East and has any sort of connections with work over there?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I still am, but I know for a fact I've been on it.
So do you get pulled up coming in and out of the country?
No.
At all? No.
No. I think they know that I'm not a threat, maybe.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like I've got friends in positions who've said, look, you're being watched. You know, you need to understand this. And so that's cool.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's not even comparable, but my name got mixed up with somebody else who I don't think has been doing terribly good things. And for a few years there, like we were touring overseas, and every time I'd leave the country, I'd be questioned, held up, passports taken off me for durations of time and whatnot.
Yeah,
and just questioning, making phone calls, and then eventually they go, oh, sorry, it's somebody else with the same name. And they're like, oh, right. And I'm going on Google going, who is this person? Who's this elusive person that's leading an interesting life? But I've always thought anybody that is doing something that's, I guess, you know, in that part of the world or something that might be stereotypically something that may be of interest to the Australian government.
Something radical.
Yeah. And then how is that approached? And I guess being on the other end, whether you've had any sort of run-ins or anything and such.
The first time I got back, they were waiting at customs and they said, oh, you just got back from Syria. I said, yeah. So, oh, how was your trip? Yeah, it's good. Okay, go through. So they were waiting for us. They knew to expect us.
I wonder if that's even just a psychological thing, even just to say, just to let you know.
No, I think it was Father Dave had spoken to the AFP, and then they knew of his plans.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, that's heavy.
Mm. Yeah, try not to think about it.
No.
Mm.
Can you see yourself, I mean, you mentioned, obviously, you wanting to go back over, and then you're looking at Iraq as well. Is it something that you can just see as far as, you know, years to come, that this is just going to be something that's going to be a major part of your life?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
See if I can make it that far. But, I don't know. I'm just sort of going with my instincts or my intuition and trying to think more with my gut, less with my head.
Yeah.
Because if I was thinking with my head, I wouldn't fucking do it. And I wouldn't have these stories to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, it just comes back to, I guess, being present now, working out what you have.
Yeah, I think...
what you can do with it.
Western culture is very sort of brain-focused. Yeah, like,
that just sounds like me in general.
I think it was the Native Americans believed that you had three brains.
Okay.
One was your stomach, one was your heart, and one was your head.
Right.
But, yeah, it's...
what do you work out of?
I try to go with the stomach, maybe a little bit of the heart, and maybe a bit of balance between the three, but try not to be over-focused with the I didn't really think this through before I started talking about it. But.
It's just I'm over-rational about stuff.
Like, same, for
I
sure.
I will over-analyze things and I piss people off because I'm just way too rational about stuff. Yeah. So if they're with that theory of having the three, I'd definitely be the head guy. And I very...
Well, I think the stomach is there to tell you to do things and the brain is there to tell you not to do things.
Yeah. Well, I've got some reflective thinking about that now because I'm like, okay, hang on. Do I?
No. It's just a theory. I could be wrong.
No, hey, yeah. It's perspective. It's a different view on it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you much of a fan of Henry Rollins?
Yeah.
So a lot of his stuff, just listening to your stories, it just reminds me of things that he says where he's like, just, I'm going to pick the country that nobody wants to go to. And yeah, I'm just going to go there. And when people, like the locals will go, what are you doing here? And his tagline is, and it's so cheesy, but it's cool. He just says, I'm here to meet you. And just puts out his hand to shake their hand. And so, and he just says, like, I just break in my mind every stereotype that's out there where people tell me, don't speak to those people because they're evil or blah, 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 and all this sort of stuff that's been fed to us. And he'll deliberately go out there to break his own prejudice against people because, you know, that's the best way of working out that we're all, we're all the same.
Yeah.
We're all linked. We've all got the same needs. And he says in a lot of his... spoken word stuff, most people are really cool.
There's a line from, I heard Richard Flanagan say, because he was in Beirut, not Beirut, in Lebanon at some of the refugee camps over there, and he said, these people aren't like us, they are us.
Mm.
That's just stuck in my head. It's just so much truth in those words.
Yeah. That's it. It's just, it's, depending on where you are in the world, you're a product of climate, temperature, weather, and ultimately that's probably the main difference. And you know, the lines, the states, the territories, the countries and everything have all been man-made. And and obviously, you know, we've got the natural landscape of mountain ranges and ridges and oceans and whatnot, and they could be used as divides, but in the end we're all the same species.
Yeah.
We're exactly the same. We might have variations of each other around the world depending on our environment, but ultimately we're all the same.
Yeah.
We're all exactly the same. We all, I mean, this might be a bit woo-woo, but we're all breathing at the same time. We're like bacteria. We're all functioning in the same way.
Mm.
And then there's little differences here and there, but ultimately we're this fungus, with this...
This technology is killing us, making us lazy. Just want life to be easy. It makes life easier.
I think, maybe. Probably in a large part.
I want mangoes in winter. It's just fucking not normal.
But then you don't appreciate mangoes after a while.
That's it. It's like
you
when you
wait for that part, that season to kick in, and then you...
Like you download your favourite band's entire back catalogue in one hit. You never listen to it.
Oh.
You buy that album and it's fucking on repeat for 6 months.
Well, I've told this story a million times, but growing up, I would be given like $30 or $40 from my parents, and that would be me to, and I'm living in Brisbane, catch a train, go in the city for the whole day, walk around with my mates, walk in and out of shops and look at stuff and get some food and come home.
Yeah.
And that money would pay for public transport, a little bit of food, and then if I wanted to buy something else on top of it. And so, you know, back in the day, like a CD would cost like $30, $35, be like through the neck. And so I'd be like, I would only buy like a small French fries from Macca's just so I could have enough money to buy the CD. I don't care if I was starving, I wanted to get that music. This is before, you know, Discmans were expensive.
How old are you?
33.
Okay.
And so I'd be on the train, I couldn't listen to it because I couldn't afford a Discman because they were like $300 or whatever. And so... You had nothing to do, you'd be talking with your friends, and then you'd be opening your CD case up, you'd be going through the liner notes, you're reading all the lyrics, you're trying to work out what the hell they're singing about, you're looking at the thanks list to see who they're thanking on, oh, I wonder who that band is, I'll make a note of that, and then buy that CD next time. And then you get home, and you'd sit in front of that stereo, and you'd just be totally engrossed, you'd be in the moment, you'd be focused on what is playing in front of you. And then when I started earning money, and I had a job...
Yeah.
I'd be like, hell yeah. I'd walk into a store, buy 10 CDs at the one time, go home, And then I'd just sift through them, and it got worse and worse. I'd have a few $100, I'd go in and just buy a shitload of CDs. It'd be a CD sale at JB. I'd just like go in with a basket and just like stockpile, and I was like collecting. I'd love it. But then you just lose track of it. You couldn't remember what you owned. You'd never sit there and listen to the whole album. You'd listen to little bits and go, nah, shit. And then you lose touch. You lose that appreciation.
You used to go to Video Easy and get a video or a DVD.
Have for the week.
Even if you didn't like it, you'd fucking sit there and watch it all because you paid for it.
Oh, yeah.
Now you like download the latest Hollywood blockbuster. Fucking $200 million movie that I'd spent 2 years making. You get 5 minutes and go, nah, shit.
Yeah, nah, I've got better things to do. Yeah, Something else I'd rather watch.
I'd rather watch another movie.
Yeah, that's right. I've got 200 movies in my list here that I can pick out of.
Yeah.
I'd rather go for that.
It just sucks all the fun out of life. Yeah. It's all about... I don't know. I guess sort of harping back to what I was talking about before, trying to find balance, like trying to find getting joy out of things again.
Yeah.
Just, what's the word? Fucking mental block. It's 20 years of spray paint right there. Okay. Moderation. It's all about moderation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, a bit of everything is good.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. You gotta starve yourself of some things because you're not going to appreciate them when they do come around.
Yeah.
And all the cliches are so funny because you hear all these cliches growing up and then one by one they pop back up into your life as you get older and you go, oh,
I get it.
It's a saying for a reason. Yeah. I understand the meaning behind it now. Like, you know,
it's
you
like mum used to say, you need to get a hobby. It's like, yeah, I will.
Yeah, yeah.
And 20 years later, I fucking know what you were talking about now. It just made no sense at the time. I thought you were just being a bitch.
Words of wisdom.
Yeah.
Well, I'm keeping you on the time. I have to wrap it up. But I'm going to put links online so people can check out your work.
Yeah, cool.
You can flick me through anything in particular that you want to sort of highlight. But any of the projects as well that you're working on. And I'll put the exhibitions for 2018 in there as well.
Sure.
But yeah, thanks so much.
It's been great talking to you, man.
I hope it's not chicken pox.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, awesome.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Let everyone else know.
Fucking hope not.
Thanks, man.
Cheers, man.
Thank you very much, everybody. If you want to reach out to Luke and learn more about what he does, you can go to elkstencils.com. That's ELKSTENCILS.com. Or as always, go to andysocial.net where I'm going to dump a whole bunch of links and photos and video content in the show notes for this episode, including a bunch of media articles. Luke's been on almost every major media outlet in Australia over the years. So there's lots of cool stuff out there. So I'll try and find some really, really cool stuff for you guys to check out if you go to the show notes. All right, guys, before I wrap it up very quickly, my new podcast, Self-Starter. If you haven't checked it out and you're interested in small business, self-employment and freelancing, you can go to selfstarter.com.au or you can search for Self-Starter in your preferred podcast player. It's not just for people that are interested in starting their own business or quitting their job and sticking it to the man. It's about anyone that wants to create some revenue on the side or just doing something on their own accord. So heaps of stuff there. It's a great thing that I've started. I'm really excited about it and I'm really looking forward to seeing it evolve in the coming months. So I really would appreciate any support that you guys can give. And if you're even a little bit interested in that sort of world of self-employment, then I would love for you guys to check out the Self-Starter podcast and give it a go. If you want to shout me a beer, you can do so over at andysocial.net by clicking on the Shout Me a Beer link, and that will take you to paypal.me where you can throw me a couple of bucks if you want to support this podcast financially. All the little bits and pieces of money that I do receive helps me cover just the normal monthly costs of hosting and gear and all sorts of stuff. So it is appreciated, and thank you very much to those people that fling me a couple of dollars here and there. I also have merchandise, Andysocial t-shirts, and a USB flash drive which is shaped as a credit card and has the Andysocial artwork on it that contains the first 100 episodes of the podcast on there. So if you're a bit of a data freak and you're always conscious about your data, you could buy this and then just shove it into your car stereo or wherever the hell you want to do it. And you can listen to the first 100 episodes. And if that goes well, then I might just do it every 100 episodes. So we'll see what happens in the future. And that's over at andysocial.net. Click on the buy stuff link and there's a whole bunch of links there to get my merchandise. Last but not least, there is a brand new Lorde live album recorded live at Prog Power USA in 2016. That has come out in December. You can watch and listen to it right now online by going to lorde.net.au, but you can also pre-order a limited edition CD, which is just, well, it's CD, so of course it's audio only, but it also includes three unreleased Lorde bonus tracks as well, which we have not announced what they are yet, but that will be officially released in February, but you can pre-order it now, and those pre-orders will last up until mid-January. Now, depending on how that all goes, we may not have too many copies left. So if you're on the fence and you're thinking about getting it, I would get one now. That's over at lorde.net.au. That's enough, guys. I have a couple more podcasts before the end of 2017, so I'll explain a little bit more getting closer to the end of the year. But until then, thank you very much for listening. I've struggled through this intro and outro for whatever reason. I cannot spit out any words, but thank you all the same for listening. And until next week, ta-ta. You're a day, you're a-